This sort of place, said the Dean. Deep tan, shortage of trousers, the sort of fellow who'd know what the wildlife is called, certainly.
He just drew it, said the bursar.
Oh, did he? Very good artist, some of these chaps. He's not Rincewind, is he? Said Redcully, who seldom bothered to remember faces. I know he's a bit on the dark side, but a few months in the sun would bake anyone.
The other wizards drew together and looked around for any nearby sign of mobile rectangularity. No hat, said Ponder, and that was that. The Dean peered at the rock wall.
Quite good drawings for native art, he said. Interesting lines.
The bursar nodded. As far as he could see, the drawings were simply alive. They might be coloured earth on rock, but they were as alive as the kangaroo that had just hopped away. The old man was drawing a snake now, one wiggly line.
I remember seeing some of those palaces the Tezumen built in the jungle, said the Dean, watching him. Not an ounce of mortar in the whole place, and the stones fit together so well you couldn't stick a knife between them. Ah, they were about the only things the Tezumen didn't stick a knife between, he added. Odd people, really. Very big on wholesale human sacrifice and cocoa. Not an obvious combination, to my mind. Kill 50,000 people and then relax with a nice cup of hot chocolate. Excuse me, I used to be quite good at this.
To the horror, even of Redcully, the Dean took the piece of frayed twig out of the painter's hand and dabbed it gently on the rock.
See? Dot for the eye, said the Dean, handing it back.
The painter gave him a sort of smile. That is, he showed his teeth. Like many other beings on astral planes of all kinds, he was puzzled by the wizards. They were people with the family-sized self-confidence that seems to be able to get away with anything. They generated an unconscious field which said that, of course, they should be there, but no one was to worry or fuss around tidying up the place on their account and just get on with whatever they were doing. The more impressionable victims were left with the feeling that they had clipboards and were awarding marks. Behind the Dean, a snake wriggled away.
"Anyone feel anything odd?" said the lecturer in recent rooms. "My fingers tingled. Did any of you do any magic just then?"
The Dean picked up a burnt twig. The painter's mouth dropped open as the wizard drew a scratching line on the stone.
"I think you might be offending him," said Ponder.
"Nonsense. A good artist is always prepared to learn," said the Dean. "Interesting thing, these fellows never seem to get the idea of perspective."
The bursar thought, or received the thought, that's because perspective is a lie. If I know a pond is round, then why should I draw it oval? I will draw it round because round is true. Why should my brush lie to you just because my eye lies to me? It sounded like quite an angry thought.
What's that you're drawing, Dean? Said the senior wrangler.
What does it look like? A bird, of course.
The voice in the bursar's head thought, but a bird must fly. Where are the wings?
This one's standing on the ground. You don't see the wings, said the Dean,
and then looked puzzled at having answered a question no one had asked.
Blast! You know, it's harder than it looks, drawing on a rock.
I always see the wings, thought the voice in the bursar's head. The bursar fumbled for his dried frog pill bottle. The voices were never usually this precise.
Very flat bird, said Redcully. Come on, Dean, our friend here isn't very happy. Let's go and work out a really good boat spell.
Looks more like a weasel to me, said the senior wrangler. You got the tail wrong. The stick slipped.
A duck is fatter than that, said the chair of indefinite studies. You shouldn't try to show off, Dean. When was the last time you saw a duck that didn't have peas round it?
Last week, actually.
Yes, we had crispy duck with plum sauce, I now recall. Here, let me have a go.
Now you've given it three legs.
I did ask for the stick. You snatched it away.
Now look, said Redcully. I'm a man who knows his ducks, and what you've got there is laughable. Give me that. Thank you. You do a beak like this.
That's on the wrong end, and it's too big.
You think that's a beak?
Look, all three of you are barking up the wrong tree. Give me that stick. Ah, but you see, ducks don't bark. Ha! There's no need to snatch like that.
Unseen University was built of stone. So built out of stone that in fact there were many places where it was hard to tell where wild rock ended and domesticated stone began. It was hard to imagine what else you could build a university out of. If Rincewind had set out to list possible materials, he wouldn't have included corrugated iron sheets. In response to some sort of wizardly ancestral memory, though, the sheets around the gates had been quite expertly bent and hammered into the shape of a stone arch. Over it, burned into the thin metal, were the words, Nullus Anxietas.
I shouldn't be surprised, should I? He said. No worries.
The gates, which were also made of corrugated iron, nailed to bits of wood by a man using second-hand nails, were firmly shut. A crowd of people were hammering on them.
Looks like a lot of other people have the same idea, said Nielet.
There'll be another way in, said Rincewind, walking away. There'll be an alley.
Ah, there it is.
Now, these aren't stone walls, so there won't be removable bricks, which means...
He prodded at the tin sheets, and one of them wobbled.
Ah, yes, a loose sheet which swings aside so you can get back in after hours.
How did you know that?
This is a university, isn't it? Come on.
A message had been chalked beside the loose sheet. Nulli Sheilae Sanguine. Rincewind read aloud.
But your name's not Sheila, so we're probably okay.
If it means what I think it means they don't allow women, said Nielet. You should have brought Darlene.
Sorry?
Forget I mentioned it.
Somewhat to Rincewind's surprise, there was a short, pleasant lawn on the other side of the fence, illuminated by the light from a large, low building. All the buildings were low, but had big, wide roofs, giving the effect you might get if someone stepped on a lot of square mushrooms. If they'd been painted, it had been an historical event, probably coming somewhere between fire and the invention of the wheel. There was a tower. It was about 20 feet high.
"But don't call this much of a university," said Rincewind.
He allowed himself a touch of smugness.
20 feet high? I could spit from the top of it. Oh, well.
He made for the doorway, just as the light grew a lot brighter and was tinted with octarine, the eighth colour that was intimately associated with magic. The doors themselves were shut fast. He banged on them, making them rattle.
"Fraternal greetings, brothers," he shouted. "I bring you
good grief."
The world simply changed. One moment he was standing in front of a rusting door, and the next he was in a circle with half a dozen wizards watching him. He caught his balance.
"Well, full marks for effort," he managed. "Where I come from, and you can call me Mr. Boring if you like, we just opened the door."
"Stone the crows, but we're getting good at this," said a wizard.
And they were wizards. Rincewind was in no doubt of it. They had proper pointy hats, although the brims were larger than anything he'd seen without flying buttresses. Their robes weren't much more than waist length, and below them they wore shorts, long grey socks, and big leather sandals. A lot of this was not the typical wizarding outfit as he'd grown up to understand it, but they were still wizards. They had that unmistakable hot air balloon about to take off look. The apparent leader of the group nodded at Rincewind.
"Good evening, Mr. Boring. I must say you got here a lot quicker than we expected."
Rincewind felt intuitively that saying, "I was just outside the door," was not a good idea.
"I had an assisted passage," he said.
"He doesn't look very demonic," said a wizard. "Remember that last one we called up? 6 eyes and 3... The really good ones can disguise themselves, Dean." "Then this one must be a bloody genius, Arch-Chancellor."
"Thank you very much," said Rincewind. The Arch-Chancellor nodded at him. He was, of course, elderly, with a face that looked as though it had been screwed up and then smoothed out, and a short, graying beard. There was something oddly familiar that Rincewind couldn't quite place.
"We've called you up, Boring," said the man, "because we want to know what's happened to the water."
"It's all gone, is it?" said Rincewind. "Thought so."
"It can't go," said the Dean. "It's water. There's always water if you go down deep enough." "But if we go any deeper, we're going to give an elephant a bloody nasty shock," said the Arch-Chancellor. "So we..."
There was a clang as the doors hit the floor. The wizards backed away.
"What the hell's that?" said one of them.
"Oh, that's my luggage," said Rincewind. "It's made out of..."
"Not the box on legs."
"Isn't that a woman?"
"Don't ask him. He's not very quick at that sort of thing," said Nielet, stepping in behind the luggage. "Sorry, but Trunky got impatient." "We can't have women in the university," shouted the Dean. "They'll want to drink sherry."
"No worries," said the Arch-Chancellor, waving a hand irritably.
"What's happened to the water, Boring?"
"It's all been used up, I suppose," said Rincewind.
So how can we get some more?
Why does everyone ask me? Don't you have some rain-making spells or something?
There's that word again, said the Dean. Water sprinkling out of the sky, eh? I'll believe that when I see it.
We tried making one of those. What were they called? Big white bags of water, the things some of the sailors say they see in the sky.
Clouds.
Right. They don't stay up, boring. We threw one off the tower last week and it hit the Dean.
I've never believed those old stories, said the Dean, and I reckon you mongrels waited until I was walking past.
You don't have to make them. They just happen, said Rincewind. Look, I don't know how to make it rain. I thought any halfway decent wizard knew how to do a rain-making spell, he added, as someone who wouldn't know where to start.
Really? Said the Arch-Chancellor with dangerous brightness.
No offence meant, said Rincewind hurriedly. I'm sure this is a very good university, considering. Obviously, it's not a real one, but it's amazingly good in the circumstances.
What's wrong with it? Said the Arch-Chancellor.
Well, your tower's a little bit on the small side, isn't it? I mean, even compared to the buildings around here.
Not that there's... I think we ought to show Mr. Boring our tower, said the Arch-Chancellor. I don't think he's taking us seriously.
I've seen it, said Rincewind.
From the top?
No, obviously not from the top.
We haven't got time for this, Arch-Chancellor, said a small wizard. Let's send this wazzer back to hell and find something better.
Excuse me, said Rincewind. By hell, do you mean some hot red place?
Yes.
Really? How do Exians know when they've got there? The beer's warmer?
No more arguing. This one turned up very fast when we did the summoning, so this is the one we need, said the Arch-Chancellor. Come along, Boring. This won't take a minute.
Ponder shook his head and wandered over to the fire. Mrs. Whitlow was sitting demurely on a rock. In front of her, getting as close to the fire as possible, was the librarian. He was still extremely small. Maybe his temporal gland had to take longer to work itself out, Ponder thought.
"What are the gentlemen doing?" said Mrs. Whitlow.
She had to raise her voice above the argument, but Mrs. Whitlow would still have said, "Is there some difficulty?" if she saw the wizards out on the lawn throwing fireballs at the monsters from the dungeon dimensions. She likes to be told these things.
They found a man drawing the most alive-looking pictures I've ever seen, said Ponder. So now they're trying to teach him art. By committee.
The gentlemen always take an interest, said Mrs. Whitlow.
They always interfere, said Ponder. I don't know what it is about wizards. They can't just watch. So far they're arguing about how to draw a duck, and frankly I don't think a duck has four legs, which is what it's got so far. Honestly, Mrs. Whitlow, they're like kittens in a feather-plucking shed. What's that?
The librarian had tipped up the leather bag lying by the fire and was testing the contents for taste in the way of young mammals everywhere. He picked up a flat, bent piece of wood, painted in lines of many colours, far more pigments than the old man had been using to paint, and Ponder wondered why. He tested it for palatability, banged it on the ground in a vaguely hopeful way, and threw it away. Then he pulled out a flat oval of wood on a piece of string and tried chewing the string.
"Is that a yo-yo?" said Mrs. Whitlow.
"We used to call them bull roarers when I was a kid," said Ponder. "You whirl it around over your head to make a funny noise."
He waved his hand vaguely in the air.
"Eek! Ooh, isn't that sweet? He's trying to do what you do."
The librarian tried to whirl the string, wrapped it round his face, and hit himself on the back of the head.
"Oh, the poor little thing! Take it off him, Mr. Stibbons, do!"
The librarian bared some small fangs as Ponder unwound the string.
"I hope he's going to grow up soon," he said. "Otherwise the library will be filled up with cardboard books about bunnies."
It really was a very stubby tower. The base was stonework, but about halfway the builders had got fed up and resorted to rusted tin sheets nailed onto a wooden framework. One rickety ladder led up.
"Very impressive," sighed Rincewind.
"The view's even better from the top. Go on up!"
The ladder shook under Rincewind's weight until he pulled himself up onto the planks, where he lay down and panted. Must be the beer and the excitement, he told himself. One short ladder shouldn't do this to me.
"Bracing air up here, isn't it?"
said the Arch-Chancellor, walking to the edge and waving a hand towards the city.
"Oh, certainly," said Rincewind, tottering towards the corrugated battlements. "Why, I expect you can see all the way to the grill.
The Arch-Chancellor grabbed him and pulled him back.
"That's...
It's...
Rincewind gasped.
Want to go back down again?
Rincewind glared at the wizard and inched his way carefully back to the stairs. He looked down, ready at an instant's notice to draw his head back, and carefully counted the steps. Then he walked back gingerly to the parapet and risked looking over the edge. There was the fiery speck of the burning brewery. There was Buggerup and its harbour. Rincewind raised his gaze. There was the red desert glittering under the moonlight.
How high is this?
He croaked.
On the outside, about half a mile, we think, said the Arch-Chancellor.
And on the inside?
You climbed it. 2 stories.
You're trying to tell me that you've got a tower that's taller at the top than it is at the bottom?
Good, isn't it?
Said the Arch-Chancellor happily.
That's very clever, said Rincewind.
We're a clever country.
Rincewind? The voice came from below. Rincewind looked very carefully down the steps. It was one of the wizards.
Yes, he said.
Not you,
snapped the wizard.
I want the Arch-Chancellor.
I'm Rincewind, said Rincewind.
The Arch-Chancellor tapped him on the shoulder.
That's a coincidence,
he said.
So am I.
Ponder very carefully handed the bull-roarer back to the little librarian.
There, you can have it, he said. I'm giving it to you, and in return perhaps you can take your teeth out of my leg.
From the other side of the rock came the voice of reason.
There's no need to fight, gentlemen. Let's vote on it. Now, all those who think a duck has webbed feet, raise your hands.
The librarian swung the thing a few more times.
Doesn't seem to be a very good one, said Ponder. Not much of a noise. Honestly, how much longer are they going to be?
Whum.
Yeek. Yes, yes, very good.
Whum. Whum. Whum.
Ponder looked up as yellow light spread across the plain. There was a circle of blue sky opening above. The rain was stopping.
Yeek.
It occurred to Ponder to wonder what a little old man was doing painting pictures in a bare landscape on a whole new continent. And then there was darkness. The old man smiled with something like satisfaction and turned away from the drawing he'd just completed. It had a lot of pointy hats in it, and it had faded right into the rock. And he was as happy as anything, and had drawn all the spiders and several possums before he found out what was missing. He never even knew about the very strange and unhappy duck-billed creature that slid silently into the river a little way off.
"Got to be at least some kind of cousins," said the Arch-Chancellor. "It's not a common name. Have another beer."
"I had a look through the unseen records once," said Rincewind, morosely. "They never had a Rincewind before."
He upended the can of beer and finished the dregs.
"Never had a relative before, come to that. Never, ever."
He pulled the top off another can.
"No one to do all those little things relatives are supposed to do, like send you some horrible cardigan at Hogswatch. Stuff like that."
"You got a first name? Mine's Bill."
"It's a good name. Bill Rincewind. Don't know if I've even got a first name."
"What do people usually call you, mate?"
"Well, they usually say stop him," said Rincewind, and took a deep draught of beer. "Of course, that's just a nickname. When they want to be formal, they shout, don't let him get away."
He squinted at the can.
"It's much better than the other stuff," he said. "What's this say? Funnel web? It's a funny name for a beer."
"You read in the list of ingredients," said Bill.
"Really?" mumbled Rincewind. "Where was I?"
"Pointy hats, water running out, talking kangaroos, pictures coming alive."
"That's right," said the Dean. "If that's what you're like sober, we want to see what effect a beer has."
"You see, when the sun's up," said Arch-Chancellor Bill, "I've got to go down to the prison and see the Prime Minister and explain why we don't know what's happened to the water. Anything you can do to assist would be very useful. Give him another tinny, Dean. People are already banging on the gates. Once the beer runs out, we're in strife."
Rincewind felt that he was in a warm amber haze. He was among wizards. You could tell by the way they bickered all the time. And somehow the beer made it easier to think. A wizard leaned over his shoulder and put an open book in front of him.
"This is a copy of a cave painting from Kangoolie," he said. "We've often wondered what the blobs are above the figures."
"That's rain," said Rincewind after a glance.
"You mentioned this before," said Bill. "Little drops of water flying through the air, right?"
"Dropping," Rincewind corrected him.
"And it doesn't hurt?"
"Nope."
"Water's heavy. Can't say the idea of big white bags of the stuff floating around over our heads appeals."
Rincewind had never studied meteorology, although he had been an end-user all his life. He waved his hands vaguely. "They're like steam," he said, and hiccups. "That's right. It's lovely, fluffy steam." "They're boiling?" No. Very cold clouds. Sometimes they come down very low. They even touch the ground." The wizards looked at one another.
"You know, we're making some bloody good beer these days," said Bill.
"Clouds sound bloody dangerous to me," said the Dean. "We don't want them knocking over trees and buildings, do we?"
"Oh, but they're soft, see, like smoke."
"But you said they weren't hot."
Rincewind suddenly saw the perfect explanation. "Have you ever huffed on a cold mirror?" he said, beaming.
"Not on a regular basis, but I know what you mean."
"Well, basically, that's clouds. Can I have another beer? It's amazing. It doesn't seem to have any effect on me, no matter how much I drink. It helps me think clearer."
Arch-Chancellor Rincewind drummed his fingers on the table. "You and this rain stuff, you got to be connected, yes? We've run out of water, and you turn up."
Rincewind burped.
"Got to put something right, too," he said. "Pointy hats all floating in the air."
"When did you last see them?"
"In the brewery, with no beer in it. Said it's haunted. Pointy hat haunting."
Bill stared at him.
"Right," he said.
He looked at the forlorn figure of his distant cousin, now very close up.
"Let's get down there."
He glanced at Rincewind again and seemed to think for a moment.
"And we'll take some beer," he added.
Ponder Stibbons tried to think, but his thoughts seemed to be going very slowly. Everywhere was dark and he couldn't move, but somehow it wasn't too bad. It felt like those treasured moments in bed when you're just awake enough to know that you're still nicely asleep. It's amazing how time passes. There was a huge bucket chain now, stretching all the way from the harbour to the brewery. Despite the tangily refreshing oak spiciness of their Chardonnays, the Exians weren't the kind of people to let a brewery burn. It didn't matter that there was no beer in it. There was a principle at stake. The wizards marched through the crowd to a chorus of mutters and the occasional jeer from someone safely tucked away at the back. Smoke and steam came out of the main doorway, which had been burst open by a battering ram. Arch-Chancellor Rincewind stepped inside, dragging his happily smiling relative with him. The smouldering Rue Beer sign, reduced to a metal skeleton, still lay in the middle of the floor.
"He kept waving at it and going on about pointy hats," Neelette volunteered.
"Test it for magic, Dean," said Arch-Chancellor Rincewind.
The Dean waved a hand. Sparks flew up.
"Nothing there," he said. "I said we..."
For a moment, some pointed shapes hung in the air and then vanished.
"That's not magic," said one of the wizards. "That's ghosts. Everyone knows this place is haunted. Evil spirits, they say." "Should have stuck to beer," said Arch-Chancellor Rincewind.
Neelette pointed to the trapdoor. "But it doesn't go anywhere," she said. "There's a hatch to the outside and some storerooms, and that's about it." The wizards looked down. Below was utter darkness. Something small skittered away on what sounded very much like more than four legs. There was the smell of very old, very stale beer.
"No worries," said Rincewind, waving a tin expansively. "I'll go down first, shall I?"
This was fun. There was a rusted ladder bolted to the wall below him. It creaked under his weight, and gave way when he was a few feet from the cellar floor, dropping him onto the stones. The wizards heard him laugh. Then he called up,
"Do any of you know someone called Dibbler?"
"What, old Fairgo?" said Bill.
"That's right. He'll be outside selling stuff to the crowd, right?"
"Very likely.
Can someone go and get me one of his floating meat pies with extra tomato sauce? I could really do with one."
The Dean looked at Arch-Chancellor Rincewind.
"How much beer did he drink?" 3 or 4 tinnies. He must be allergic, poor bastard."
"I reckon I could even eat 2, Rincewind called up.
2?
No worries. Anyone got a torch? It's dark down here."
"Do you want the gourmet pies or the ordinary?" said the Dean.
"Oh, the ordinary'll do me. No swank, eh?"
"Poor bastard," said Bill, and sorted through his small change.
It was indeed dark in the cellars, but enough dim light filtered through the trapdoor for Rincewind to make out huge pipes in the gloom. It was obvious that some time after the brewery had been closed, but before people had got around to securely locking every entrance, the cellars had been employed by young people as such places are when you live with your parents, the house is too small, and no one has got around to inventing the motor car. In short, they'd written on the walls. Rincewind could make out careful inscriptions telling posterity that, for example, B. Smoth is a poser. While he didn't know what a poser was, he was quite sure that B. Smoth didn't want to be called one. It was amazing how slang seemed to radiate its meaning even in another language. There was a thump behind him as the luggage landed on the stone floor.
"Me old mate Trunky," said Rincewind. "No worries."
Another ladder was eased down, and the wizards, with some care, joined him. Arch-Chancellor Rincewind was holding a staff with a glowing end.
"Found anything?" he said.
"Well, yes. I wouldn't shake hands with anyone called B. Smoth," said Rincewind.
"Ah, oh, the Dean's not a bad bloke when you get to know him. What's up?"
Rincewind pointed to the far end of the room. There, on a door, someone had drawn some pointy hats in red. They glistened in the light.
"My word. Blood," said Rincewind.
His cousin ran a finger over it.
"It's ochre," he said. "Clay."
The door led to another cellar. There were a few empty barrels, some broken crates, and nothing else except musty darkness. Dust whirled up on the floor from the draft of their movement, in a series of tiny inverted whirlwinds. Pointy hats again.
"Solid walls all round," said Bill. "Better pick a direction, mate."
Rincewind had a drink, shut his eyes, and pointed a finger at random.
"That way."
The luggage plunged forward and struck the brickwork, which fell away to reveal a dark space beyond. Rincewind stuck his head through. All the builders had done was wall up and square off a part of a cave. From the feel of the air, it was quite a large one. Neelette and the wizards climbed through behind him. "I'm sure this place wasn't here when the brewery was built," said Neelette.
"It's big," said the Dean. "How did it get made?"
"Water," said Rincewind.
"You what? Water makes great big holes in rock?"
"Yes, don't ask me why."
"What was that?"
"What? Did you hear something?"
"You said, what was that?"
Rincewind sighed. The cold air was sobering him up.
"You really are wizards, aren't you?" he said. "Real honest-to-goodness wizards. You've got hats that are more brim than point. The whole university's made of tin. You've got a tiny tower which is, I must admit, good grief, a lot taller on the outside. But you're wizards all right, and will you now, please, shut up?"
In the silence there was, very faintly, a plink. Rincewind stared into the depths of the cave. The light from the staffs only made them worse. It cast shadows. Darkness was just darkness, but anything could be hiding in shadows. "These caves must have been explored," he said. It was a hope rather than a statement. History here was rather a rubbery thing.
"Never heard of them," said the Dean.
"Points again, look," said Bill as they advanced. "Just stalactites and stalagmites," said Rincewind. "I don't know how it works, but water drips on stuff and leaves piles of stuff. Takes thousands of years. Perfectly ordinary."
"Is this the same kind of water that floats through the sky and gouges out big caves in rocks?" said the Dean.
Yes, obviously," said Rincewind.
"It's good luck for us that we only have the drinking and washing sort, then."
"Had," said Rincewind.
There were hurrying feet behind them, and a junior wizard ran up holding a plate covered with a lid.
"Got the last one," he said. "It's a gourmet pie, too."
He lifted the lid. Rincewind stared and swallowed.
Oh, dear.
"What's up?"
"Have you got some more of that beer? I think I might be losing concentration."
His cousin stepped forward, ripping the top off a can of funnel web.
"Cartwright, you cover that pie up and keep it warm. Rincewind, you drink this."
They watched him drain the tin.
"Right, mate," said the Arch-Chancellor. "How about a nice meat pie upside down in a big bowl of mushy green peas covered with tomato sauce?"
He looked at the colour change on Rincewind's face and nodded.
"You need another tin," he said firmly.
They watched him drink this.
"Okay," said the Arch-Chancellor after a while. "Now, Rincewind, how about a nice one of Fargo's pie floaters, eh? Meat pie in a pea soup and tomato sauce."
Rincewind's face twitched a bit as amber blessings shut down vital protective systems.
"Sounds good," he said. "Maybe with some coconut on the top?"
The wizards relaxed.
"So now we know," said Arch-Chancellor Rincewind. "We've got to keep you just drunk enough so that Dibbler's pies sound tasty, but not so drunk that it causes lasting brain damage." "That's a very narrow window we got there," said the Dean. Bill looked up at the roof where the shadows danced among the stalactites, unless they were